Many aspects of parenting are viewed as vital for the physical and emotional health of children, but few evoke such strong feelings and moral judgments as breastfeeding.
While few would dispute that breastfeeding can be an opportunity to bond with a new baby and to provide solid nutrition early in life, the reality is that not all women can breastfeed, and some of the determining factors are economic status and public policy.
Joining us now to unravel the issues that surround breastfeeding is Courtney Young. Her upcoming book is called Lactivism: How Feminists and Fundamentalists, Hippies and Yuppies, and Physicians and Politicians Made Breastfeeding Big Business and Bad Policy. And a link to a recent New York Times opinion piece called Overselling Breastfeeding is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Courtney, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much.
Well, you start your piece by sharing your own experience of just barely being in a position where you're showing your pregnancy and people offering their opinions about breastfeeding. What kinds of stuff did people say to you?
Well, they were very eager to make sure that I was going to breastfeed, and they wanted to explain the benefits of breastfeeding, which ranged from bonding benefits to, you know, to all of the health conditions, the dangerous health conditions that I could reduce the risk of through breastfeeding, like, you know, ranging from cancer and Crohn's disease to infections, diabetes, asthma, et cetera. So they, you know, in general, they just wanted to make sure that I knew what all the benefits of breastfeeding were and that I would not be misguided on this topic.
And then you got to a point where the class that you were taking at a hospital said they wouldn't even tell you how formula worked, how that would factor in. So where were you at that point on this, on the whole breastfeeding thing?
Well, at that point, you know, it had never really occurred to me not to breastfeed. But the truth was I hadn't given it a great deal of thought. I was pregnant with my first child. And, you know, I'd always just assumed that breastfeeding was just, you know, one way somebody might choose to feed a baby. And I didn't realize all of the how strongly people felt about breastfeeding. And, you know, in general, I just couldn't understand why people had any interest at all in how anybody might feed their baby. So then at the hospital, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that I had any particular interest in formula feeding, but one of the other women in the class made clear that she wasn't going to be able to breastfeed, and she wanted information about formula feeding. And the person who was teaching the prenatal class just flatly refused to even discuss it, and she said it was against hospital regulations. I think that she was actually mistaken about that. I don't think that was against hospital regulations, but that was how she avoided the topic.
Now, a few sentences ago, you used the word choose, that this would be one way you would choose to feed a baby, breastfeeding, the other way being formula, and sometimes it's just necessity. But do you think that our culture views it that way, sees it as a choice, or does our culture see it as something different?
Well, I mean, there's culture and there's public policy, right? So, I mean, the strongest indicator of the fact that it's clearly not seen as a choice comes from, you know, recent initiatives in the last 3 or 4 years to turn breastfeeding into a public health issue. And now that it's a public health issue, and that's, you know, that's an official designation that is that the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention and the U.S. Surgeon General have all decided that that breastfeeding is a public health issue. And when it becomes a public health issue, part of the reason to officially identify breastfeeding or the failure to breastfeed as a public health issue is to draw attention to that. And so, for example, what the director of the section on breastfeeding of the American Academy of Pediatrics issued the press statement connected to turning breastfeeding into a public health issue, and he said clearly it's not what this means is that it's not should you or shouldn't you. Of course you should. Breastfeeding is important for the health of our children, and it's important that we advocate strongly for it. And other, you know, heads of organizations and public health officials echoed that statement, basically saying, you know, what's good about turning it into a public health issue is making sure that people realize that it's not a choice.
Well, so there's this public health mandate. So where does the United States fall among other countries in terms of our rates of breastfeeding?
Well, in the U.S., 79% of women initiate breastfeeding. And so that is not so far off what the rates are in other advanced, you know, Western countries. Canada, the rate is 89%. But at 6 months, in the United States, 49% of women are breastfeeding, and in Canada, it's just over 50%. So, you know, comparing the U.S. and Canada, you've got rough parity, not in terms of initiation, but certainly in terms of how many women keep on breastfeeding for any length of time. Norway, of course, is much higher. Norway, the Nordic country, the, you know, that's where we always hear of people breastfeeding for, you know, everybody breastfeeding and breastfeeding for long periods of time. But the UK and France are much lower than the United States. So, you know, the U.S. is not an outlier among countries that, you know, we would often consider to be sort of the relevant comparisons.
We're talking to Courtney Young right now. She's the author of a new book called Lactivism. And Courtney, among the statistics that you just mentioned about the United States, how does that break down by factors of race and class?
It breaks down, it's very different by race and class. So among women who, the women who are most likely to be breastfeeding in the United States are white, older, married, and have higher levels of education and to be in the highest socioeconomic bracket. And so the women who are not breastfeeding tend to be poor, African American, and single.
And so given these numbers, there is, as you said, this public health push to get more people to breastfeed. And the accepted wisdom is that it's good for the baby, that there are clear-cut health benefits. And you went and you looked closely at this medical research. What did you find?
Well, that's exactly where my concern lay, right? I mean, it's one thing to identify something like smoking as a public health issue, as something that, you know, we should really get involved in having people stop smoking. Because I think that the research on the dangers of smoking is probably, you know, pretty strong and, at this point, I think irrefutable. But the research associated with the benefits of breastfeeding is not that strong at all. So, you know, I mean, I don't know, you know, how many people think about this, but when you look at the list of things that is associated with breastfeeding, the list of things that allegedly you can decrease the risk of through breastfeeding, it's extensive. It includes not only infections, but also asthma, allergies, Crohn's disease, diabetes, obesity, some cancers, cardiovascular disease, eczema, and on the other side of the scale, increasing a child's IQ or cognitive development. And in fact, the evidence for breastfeeding research in general is weakened by the fact that almost all of it is all of it, in fact, is observational. You cannot do randomized controlled trials on breastfeeding because you cannot, it's not ethical or even feasible for doctors or researchers to randomly sort women into breastfeeding and non-breastfeeding cohorts. Women have preferences about how they're going to feed their babies, and they're not, you know, likely to be randomly sorted that way. And so all of the studies on breastfeeding benefits are observational, and that makes them much weaker than a lot of standard scientific evidence that we rely on, which is mostly done, you know, most of the research is done through randomized control trials. Breastfeeding research is weaker because it's observational. So you can't control, you need to control for other factors that could have had an impact on the outcome that you're studying. So, for example, if mothers who breastfeed are also much more likely to be in higher socioeconomic brackets and have better access to health care and also are less likely to smoke, any one of those factors could be actually what is contributing to the better health outcomes and not breastfeeding itself. So that's part of, you know, there's a whole way in which a lot of the research itself is not as strong as other medical research. But in fact, as this research advances, you know, they're finding more and more that the associations the things we commonly associate with reducing the risk of through breastfeeding are not, they've been disproven, or they're very close to being disproven, or it looks less and less likely that it's true. There's more and more research coming out that says, for example, that it's very unlikely that breastfeeding has an impact on obesity. It's very unlikely that it has an impact on asthma and allergies. I think now that people basically agree, or, you know, studies are accumulating to show that there's no evidence of an effect on type 1 diabetes. The Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality estimates that there's no, you know, having reviewed the literature, they think it's unlikely that there's an effect on cardiovascular disease. I think there is an effect on infections. And, of course, when I say I think there is an effect, it's not my opinion I'm referring to. It's, you know, the balance of the literature, the medical research in the literature, seems to show that there is, that breastfeeding has an effect on reducing the risk of ear, gastrointestinal, and lung infections during the period that the baby is actually breastfeeding.
We're talking with Courtney Young right now about her New York Times piece called Overselling Breastfeeding. And we want to hear from you. Were you able to breastfeed your children? What were some of the barriers? Or did you feel that you had the support that you needed? Did you ever feel guilty or bad because you couldn't breastfeed? Do you think there should be, or is there, pressure that you perceive to breastfeed? Call in right now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation with Courtney Young about her New York Times piece, Overselling Breastfeeding. And we want to hear from you. Do you think there's too much emphasis on breastfeeding in our country? Do you think there needs to be more support for moms who want to breastfeed? Or do you think there are plenty of accommodations being made already? Join in by calling 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org or tweet us at Central Time WPR.
And we go to our callers now. We have Emily on the line in Wanakee. Hi, Emily.
Hi. I was just going to mention that I've had two children, and one of them, actually both of them, went through C-section. But the first one was because they had preeclampsia, and I just couldn't produce enough milk to breastfeed. And I felt from the nursing staff and mainly women around me that it was not the best choice. I felt like I was being judged quite a bit.
Emily, thank you for that. I've got a little bit of distortion on your line, but you were saying that you were not able to produce enough milk with preeclampsia, and you felt judgment from women, and I think you mentioned some nurses as well, just or questioning of your judgment, I should say. And Courtney, would you say that is something that some women encounter when they can't breastfeed?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things that's really personally sad about this for people is that there are a lot of women, you know, experts estimate that up to 15% of women cannot produce enough milk to feed their babies. And the reasons range from a condition called hypoplasia, which is actually fairly common, which means, you know, basically women don't produce enough milk. Thyroid conditions can complicate milk production. There are complications in childbirth, which often impede full milk production. And some women are on medications that haven't been, that have never been tested for safety with breastfeeding. So there are a lot of situations where women actually simply cannot breastfeed. And the idea that we have that all women can breastfeed, which is what breastfeeding advocates tell people, what most women believe and understand, it's very painful. It makes those things that happen in the aftermath of giving birth, when women are very, very vulnerable anyway, it makes it all much more painful. Because if you say that all women can breastfeed and you find yourself as a new mother in a situation where, you know, maybe you fully expected to breastfeed and you can't, then you obviously, you know, there's nowhere to go other than for you to feel like you're doing something terribly, terribly wrong.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate that. And we go next to Elizabeth in Fish Creek. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi there. Well, I'll start by saying that, of course, when we're speaking about the social issue of women feeling judged when they're in a position where they aren't breastfeeding, of course. Of course, we need to be mindful of that, and there's a multitude of different reasons why a woman might not be breastfeeding. However, we seem to be mixing two things up here. That is one issue. The other issue is a legitimate conversation about the healthfulness of breastfeeding. Do we, under a circumstance where it is possible, choose that first and foremost? I have to say, Courtney, it feels like you found yourself a hot topic. And I'm going to try to say this gently, in a friendly way, but it feels like your knowledge is a mile wide and an inch deep.
Well, I think that's...
If you go deeper...
I'm going to jump in, Elizabeth. I think that's maybe getting a little personal. But, Courtney, what about the issues that Elizabeth raised there about the choice and whether it's helpful to breastfeed ultimately?
I think that under some conditions, you know, my position on breastfeeding is basically I'm not at all opposed to breastfeeding, but I think that we need a lot better information about exactly where breastfeeding is beneficial and where it isn't. And so I think we need to get to a place where the conversation is actually based on what the actual medical benefits are of breastfeeding, what we know and what we don't know. So my concern is that what we don't know is a lot more than what we think we know. And a lot of the benefits that have been ascribed to breastfeeding actually don't exist. So I think that the benefits of breastfeeding absolutely include reducing the risk of infection. So if reducing the risk of infection, so then people will make cost-benefit analyses, they'll make decisions that are based on accurate understandings of what we know about the benefits of breastfeeding, as opposed to, you know, hyperbolic constructions of breastfeeding as something that is... that's going to protect our children from almost everything. You know, as new parents, all of us want to protect our kids, and none of us really know how. And breastfeeding seems like something that we can do that will, you know, that will work for so many different things, and that's just not true. There are a lot of other things that we could be doing out there. And so when women make the choice to breastfeed, I think, you know, women in the U.S. need a heck of a lot more support when they do want to breastfeed, but they also need space or better information so that they can actually make decisions that best complement their lives and the constraints that they're experiencing themselves, their lives, their families, their needs, their baby's needs, et cetera.
And Courtney, we've just got about 30 seconds left, but what do you want women to take away from some of this research and what you've been talking about today?
I want to open the space back up for choice. The choice element is something that I feel has really disappeared from this argument or from breastfeeding advocacy. You know, the very fact that it's been turned into a public health issue undermines the idea that women should have choice.
Courtney, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your time today. That was Courtney Young. You can read her New York Times piece, Overselling Breastfeeding, at the Central Time Facebook page. And you can leave your comments there as well and keep that conversation going.